Hello and welcome to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is a Full Cup Cafe episode coming from our midweek service. So settle back for this week's teaching.
Well, good evening, everyone. Good to see all of you tonight. Well, this is my Valentine's Day message. Were you expecting to receive a Valentine's Day message? You know, Valentine's is coming up. This coming Friday, few know or maybe even care of the origin of Valentine's Day. You know, it's named after a priest who was voted to be a saint during the Middle Ages. Maybe we all are aware of that. But through legend and folklore down through the ages, he came to be associated with Cupid, with his little arrow and hearts and romantic love and that kind of thing. As far as we are concerned, we, from our earliest years, look forward to the day that we'd have our little Valentine's cards and pass them out to our classmates. So it was fun times. We've all enjoyed Valentine's. Fun, harmless, until it became more serious. It became more serious for me when I became the father of a teenage daughter. Now, do you know what I mean about that? It became serious for me. I just dreaded it as the father of a teenage daughter. Now, if you're only the father of a knucklehead, you wouldn't understand that. But if you have a daughter, you know what I mean. And then if you are the husband of a wife, it really became serious. Now, if you're the husband of a wife, you know what I mean? I guess so, because you really act serious. You're not much laughing about that. So I guess you know what I'm talking about. But it's a day that's been taken over by commercial interests by a long ways. Let's see, what would it be? The candy industry, Hallmark cards, flowers, Jared. Have you been to Jared? I don't guess I've ever been to Jared for Valentine's, but I guess some do. Restaurants for certain, florists, of course. The good old American way, let's make a dollar, and they certainly will. So like all special days, it's a good thing. It certainly keeps the American economy going. And it's an opportunity for preachers, I guess, to draw some lessons. Like I will be doing tonight to some degree. Of course, one lesson that I am inclined to draw is, should we limit romantic love to one day? I mean, after all, it's sort of like Christmas, are the lonely and homeless and the poor and the old only to be seen at Christmas time? I mean, really? Do they only enjoy turkey and ham at Christmas? Do you suppose they might enjoy something in July, but nobody seems to even notice them in the summertime? But boy, they get a lot of attention in December and November. That's the way we seem to do things. So that's one lesson. Love is to be shown at all times, not just one day in February. So that's one lesson I would draw, I guess. But something else that came to my mind this week especially, this has been a unique week for me and for members of this congregation. We've had many funerals this week. And for many of you, especially the younger of you, they went by without much notice. But the people we have buried and the people that have been affected by death this week have been remarkable couples and families. And I just wanted to call attention to this special generation that we've memorialized this week. And because they are real Valentine stories, like few you have heard before, and we just can't allow them to go by without calling attention to them. One, of course, is Warren and Billy Smith. We buried Billy this week. She had Alzheimer's for the last several years. And Billy and Warren would go out every day, of course, and feed her and be with her as the caregiver. But back when they were young, Warren, and I hope you know Warren. If you don't, well, you need to make a special effort to meet him. He's a delightful fella. His name, by the way, is on the board that used to be on the wall at 10th and Austin Church of Christ that we found in a closet here, and Elmer and I decided it just must not remain in a closet here. It must be displayed because it was handwritten or hand painted of all of the people who went to war. It was painted during that time, World War II, and Warren's name is on that list as a liar, by the way. He lied about his age to get into the Navy. And so we honor him as a liar on that board. But anyway, a delightful fellow. But he spotted Billy one Halloween and said to someone, this is remarks I made at the funeral, he planned to marry that girl. And sure enough, come Thanksgiving, they got married. Now, that's Halloween to Thanksgiving. And though there was some skepticism, I understand, by some pretty authoritative people. And by the way, that authoritative people, again, by some of you who would know, it was Aunt Carrie Smith, who was very skeptical of that arrangement, those of you who would know her. It worked. That marriage worked. And she and Warren were married in Wichita Falls in 1950. So that was 63 years they were married. And I remarked that any preacher or marriage counselor would advise against that, but for that generation who were not fearful of making commitments they intended to keep, it worked. I so wish it was a quality that could be passed on to future generations, don't you? Well, Warren and Billy Smith, a true Valentine's example. And then there is Willard and Marjorie Duke, who had been here for many, many years. They were both 98 years old, and Willard's health just finally got to the point that they had to be moved away very quickly, and their home was just left very quickly because of Willard's health, and they had to go to Fort Worth, and he eventually died fairly quickly at the young age of 98. But they had been married 71 years, he and Marjorie. They married in high school, and at one time, and I don't know what the basis of the award was or who awarded it, but they were awarded the title of the longest marriage in Wichita Falls. Remarkable. And they were devoted to each other all of that time. Now again, these are people who weren't just tied together and endured each other for this length of time. I mean, Warren and Billy and Willard and Marjorie were devoted to each other all during that time. It was a remarkable relationship. And when I called Marjorie to express my sorrow, she just simply said, "Well, he left me today." And then the last funeral was Yvonne Thornton. Earl and Yvonne. Yvonne passed away. Yvonne and Earl met in study hall at Burke Burnett in 1935. He was a handsome star basketball player, recruited from the Cashin community. He was also a boxer, and little bit questionable whether or not he should have been playing at Burke. Might have been, I don't know if there was even a UIL back then, but anyway, he was recruited to play for Burke. This guy with black curly hair, I saw a picture of him, and he was pretty good looking, pretty kind of mean looking, in fact, but Yvonne kind of fell for him, and they dated for 5 years. And then married in 1940. And this March 31st, they would have been married 74 years. 74 years married, having dated 5 years before that. And all that time completely devoted to each other. And I just said at the funeral, what an example of love during this week of Valentine's. Well, you just need to know things like that about people in this congregation that you may not even know. Examples of romantic love, Christian love. It's remarkable. Well, the love of the Bible that these folks so demonstrated is a committed love, a self-sacrificing love. It's not a feeling. It's a doing love. And these aren't the only examples. There's many of you who may not be there yet, but you're working on it. You're getting there. It's not something that you fell into. Certainly these folks are not something they fell into. You hear that expression, falling into love. Well, that's not a good Bible phrase by any means, because if you fall into something, you can just as easily fall out of it. I'm convinced of that. Especially this in the winter season, you know, you fall on the ice. It's not something you intend to do. It's kind of embarrassing when you do it. You break something when you do that. Well, I don't think you fall into love. Love is not merely an emotion. It's something that is intended. It's an action kind of thing. One of the great love passages of the Bible, and you think I'm going to talk about 1 Corinthians 13, but I'm not, though that's a wonderful description of love, biblical love. But the love passage I'm going to refer to is 1 John 3:16-18. 1 John 3:16 through 18. Now, this is easy to remember because another great love passage is John 3:16. Now that's a great passage, and you know it very well. You see it every football game, don't you? John 3:16. What does it say? Yeah, and it's a great love passage. God so loved the world that He gave, and that well expresses the essence of love. Love gives, and God is the great demonstrator of love. Love does not take. Love is not selfish. Love does not demand. Love gives. That's the essence of love. But now, if you can remember that great passage, just put a 1 in front of the John, 1 John 3:16, and notice what the same John says. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down His love for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. Okay, let's look at this passage. What is real love? Girls, look at this. Especially girls. But guys too, of course. But I really have my target on girls, because I've just been so aware through the years of women and girls who get beat up by guys, and they say, "But I know he really loves me. Deep down, he really loves me. I'm going to go back to him because I know he really loves me." And so they go back to an abusive relationship because in some kind of distorted, perverted way, they think they know what love is, and they don't. And they go back to further abuse because they have no idea what God and good and real love really is. Notice what John says. The apostle of love, by the way. This is who John is. He's called the apostle of love because more than any other of the apostles, he writes about love. He says, this is how we know what love is. Real love is sacrificial. You see, the Greek word for love in its highest form is agape, self-giving love. There are other words that are translated into English, love, but they are lower forms. Christ love, Christian love, is self-sacrificing love. If you really love in the way God wants you to love your wife, you will give yourself for your wife or your husband. Jesus Christ laid down His life for us. You'll give your life for your mate. It's the furthest thing from selfish love. It's also a giving love. It's not selfish. The person who says, "Well, I demand my rights. I have rights. You're not giving me what I need. I demand my rights here." That's not love. Love is making sure you get what you want. I want you to have what you want. I'll break my neck to see that you get what you want if I love you. Just drop a hint and I'll see that you get it if I love you. It's not about me. Me, 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 me. Run from that person who's all about me. They don't really love you. Real love is seen through actions. Let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions. Flowers are cheap. Cards, candy, all those Valentine things. Oh, I'm not saying don't do it. You may be in trouble if you don't. But action. John says, real love is seen through actions, not words. And real love is truthful. Let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and truth. Truth. Real love doesn't lie to you. Real love doesn't lie. If your mate lies to you, that's not love. That's not love. I want to stress, too, that successful romantic love is work. Work. It's not candles, and it's not perfume, and it's not all of this stuff that is so... It's not teddy bears. It's not all that silly stuff. Real romantic love that results in 74 years, 63 years. I mean, these couples we've talked about, how did they get there? Don't you know there were peaks and valleys? Don't you know there were some grit involved? Oh, don't you know? It's work. There were some work before marriage. Yvonne and Earl, they probably didn't know what premarital counseling was. Certainly, Billy and Warren Smith didn't know what premarital counseling was. Back then, nobody had heard anything about that. Long engagements, just as good as premarital counseling in my book. If you can't have good premarital counseling, have long engagements. Now, there's exceptions to that. But for Warren and Billy Smith, the exception was a generation who intended to keep their commitments. That's not now. Times have changed, I'm afraid. But long engagements are a good filter. If you're with somebody long enough, you can pretty well tell if this is someone for you or not. But premarital counseling, in the absence of long engagements, is very important. Very important. I insist on it with couples that I perform the ceremony. And it's not for the purpose of telling this couple, no, you shouldn't get married. I mean, that's never done. Don't worry about that. I mean, that's not the idea. The purpose of premarital counseling is to find out areas where growth is needed and to bring things out for discussion. You don't want surprises after you're married. If you think everything is going to turn out okay once you're married, or, and again, I sort of direct my comments toward girls and women because this tends to be something that falls in your area, you tend to think, well, I'll just change him. I know there's some things I don't like, but I'll change him. I want to tell you something, you won't. If he's on his best behavior now while he's dating, after the marriage ceremony, he ain't changing. In fact, chances are it'll be worse. So whatever it is, you need to get it out in the open now and talk about it and come to some understandings in advance of the marriage. Premarital counseling is just essential. It requires work before marriage. Whether it's long engagements or serious premarital counseling, don't take shortcuts. After marriage, it's still work. There is no such thing as automatic pilots that you just push a button after marriage. There are special challenges after marriage. Children, finances, stresses of all kinds, all shapes, small children challenges, teenage challenges, special needs children, special challenges. Even when children are grown, challenges. You never stop being a parent, challenges. Even when they move away, challenges. They have children of their own, challenges. I mean, it's just, they go into one phase after another. And you know, it never stops. It never stops. Sometimes what is needed is just old-fashioned grit, as I was saying, with all of these special couples to just get through it. Other times, special attention is needed. Sometimes you just need to get away together, never apart, by the way. Let me say, if you're having trouble in your marriage, separation, never a good idea. Never a good idea. Don't ever separate. If you think, well, we'll just separate for a while. We need our space. No, no, no. Not from each other, you don't. You may need to get away, but not from each other. Most often that leads to permanent separation and divorce. You may need counseling, but you don't need separation. Very rarely. You might cite an exception to me, but I'll go out on a limb and say that's hardly ever advisable. Believe me, you're not the first, you're not the last to ever need help in a marriage. So seek it and get it, but be in it for the long haul. And realize that in marriage, God never promised a rose garden. In spite of all the romantic songs and all the flowers and all the Valentine's ideas, God never promised a rose garden. Life is tough, especially when you've chosen the road of Christ. It's just not easy. Now, the rewards are great. In this life, you'll be honored one day by children who will stand up and honor you for sticking it out and being an example for them. They'll honor you. And their children, and their children. And of course, one day you'll hear the Lord say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." You'll be glad one day that you stuck it out. And you can. You can. That's the Valentine's you're waiting for. But let me say this also. And I know talking to a Wednesday night crowd that I don't need to stress this because I'm not talking to this type of audience, but I'm talking to people who know people. And maybe that you'll have an opportunity sometime to talk to children or grandchildren and urge them not to do something that they are tempted to do. I want to caution you to caution them to never consider cohabitation without marriage. I want to read you some things real quickly, and I think we have the time to do so. Who did that? I still have the time to do so. Senator Patrick Moynihan was a senator I admired. He's long dead now, but he was someone I admired. He was 40-year political career in the Senate, I think. But he made the statement back in the year 2000 that the biggest change that he had seen, well, I'll just quote, the biggest change that I've seen is that the family structure has come apart all over the North Atlantic world. The change has occurred in an historical instant, he said, something that was not imaginable 40 years ago. Now, he said that in the year 2000. He has since died, as I said. Now, a new State of Our Union's report taken in December 2012 concludes that things have gotten even worse. The report notes the following statistics. More than 40% of children are born out of wedlock. And it states many other statistics. Between 1970 and 2012, the annual number of marriages per 1,000 unmarried adults decreased by more than 50%. And I'm not going to go through all those numbers. Let me just give you the conclusion. The study concluded, and this is a statement that just kind of blows your mind. The study concluded that we are witnessing a striking exodus from marriage. The distinguished historian Lawrence Stone noted, the scale of marital breakdown in the West since 1960 has no historical precedent. At no time in history, with the possibility of Imperial Rome, has the institution of marriage been more problematic than today. Now, isn't that something? This is the first time that I've seen anything like that, us being compared to Imperial Rome. Statistically. Regarding cohabitation, and this is where you could talk to your children or your grandchildren, or any young people that you know, not on the basis of the Bible says naughty, naughty, on the basis of studies. In a 2007 edition of the New Oxford Review, a statistical analysis of cohabitation in America based on the findings of a number of academic resources. Here are five conclusions, and I won't read all of them, just a few of them. One, relationships are unstable in cohabitation. 1/6 of cohabitating couples stay together for only 3 years. 1 in 10 survives 5 or more years. Only 1 in 10. Cohabitating women often end up with the responsibilities of marriage. Isn't that amazing? Particularly when it comes to caring for children without the legal protection. Isn't that amazing? Research has also found that cohabitating women contribute more than 70% of the relationship's income. Isn't that amazing? Those who suffer most from cohabitation are the children. Children ages 12 through 17 with cohabitating parents are 6 times more likely to exhibit emotional and behavioral problems. And 100, a large percent more likely to be expelled from school. I'm sorry, I just scribbled that in. A 2011 research study concluded cohabitation is on the rise. Cohabitation is unstable for children. Cohabitation is unsafe for children. The report concluded that marriage is an important public good with a range of economic, health, educational, and safety benefits that help all levels of government serve the common good. In contrast, the rise of cohabitating households with children is the largest unrecognized threat to the quality and stability of children's lives in today's families. In other words, even non-biblical sources say just living together is a bad deal. Marrying is the way to go. Again, isn't that amazing God's way is the best way. So, romantic love is not to be toyed with. It's a foretaste of heaven or a foretaste of hell if it's abused. But either way, God wants in it to make it better or to make it right. I'll just end it that way. We'll do well to let Him in. And so that's my Valentine's message for you tonight. Thanks for listening. God bless you. Jay, if you have something you want to do to wind us up, I'll turn it over to you.